Nous allons terminer la session et la journée par l'intervention du docteur Bax, qui travaille aux Pays-Bas. Donc nous allons avoir son point de vue et ses connaissances sur la question de la sexualité et de l'intimité dans le contexte du traumatisme crânien. Donc, cher Wilbert, je vous laisse la parole.
Mesdames, Messieurs, chère Madame Modératrice Montreuil, chère Madame la Présidente Christine, merci beaucoup pour l'invitation pour la lecture et pour une conversation avec vous. Mon français n'est pas si bien, alors je vais changer maintenant en anglais. And because English is a bit more easy for me, it's not as well as my Dutch, but it will work. I was asked to give some details, some impression on how the situation in the Netherlands are. And for instance, for starting, it will be just a qualitative paper. I don't have any research, I don't have any results, but I'm going to share with you actually how we are dealing with these matters in the Netherlands. And that's from my own experience in the Hoensbroek Rehabilitation Center, which you see on the photograph on the left behind. I hope everything works. Okay, so let's start first with an image. And this is just a full heart image. But I suppose everyone here in the room will see something different. Some will see firstly the women, others will see firstly the men. Some will see the faces and see what's happening there. And others, and especially physicians like me, will see this and say, oh, what kind of disabilities are here? Okay, I see this woman must be blind because she has a stick signing that sees blind women. But the man, he might also have something, because is he actually only bending because he's so much longer than this woman? Or is he bending because he has some kind of cerebral palsy with not fully range of motion in his knees? So in rehabilitation, but especially on talking about sex and intimacy, we have to take care on what we ourselves are looking at and what our own position in this is. And I couldn't translate this cartoon, but of course you know already I'm a doctor. But a doctor is also a human being. And I think I will have the same things as all human beings. As soon as some subjects arise, we actually are not very eager to talk about it. So what do? We take the carpet and we stick it under. And then we think, when we don't see it, it's not there. And then we don't have to discuss it. So I have that as a doctor. You have that in the audience. Of course, my patients also have that. If they have a brain injury, or if they don't have a brain injury. And perhaps that will be the most central core of my talk, that it's not the brain which is the most important in these matters, but the person with the brain which matters. We had already some view. Hey, it's going the other way. We had already some view on neurophysiology. And you saw a lot of big schemes and neurotransmitters and acetylcholine and SSRIs and amygdala and all things. I haven't seen this one yet. And this is a homunculus. And I don't know if you probably are familiar with the homunculus. This is our normal perception as we think our body is. But if we are going to take a look at our cortex, our body dimensions differ from size depending on what part of the body it is. And so our lips, they have a huge representation. And sorry for the real good anatomist, it's not that straight. Of course, you know it's completely curved over the central sulcus of Rolandi. So you see very big projection for the lips. Well, of course, it's a major Erogenous psalm. Very big projection for the fingers, for the toes. Yeah, and sorry, ladies, this was, I couldn't make this gender as specific, but a very good, big representation of the male penis. This figure was referred to by a Dutch writer, a philosophist. He had a malignant tumor in his leg, and he had to be amputated. And as a philosopher, he was thinking a lot and was able to perceive what happened in his body and to put that into words. And he had a strange experience, but he explained it later, and then he understood it, that he had an amputated leg, that he had phantom feelings in his toes, which also were in his penis. And he said, well, I understand, because that is the cortical representation. So this is all I want to say about neurophysiology this afternoon. We should all have, and all keep have, an open mind on our own perception and ideas of sexuality, and also our own sexuality, and of course also of the sexuality of a disabled person. So this is also important. Sexuality normally is said between men and women, but can also be made between men and men, and between women and women. Do you ever ask it? In your normal anamnesis, I ask that always to my residents, because they have to be trained in learning to work as a doctor with not only with paresis, but also with sexual problems. And you can start by asking about relationships. And for a doctor especially, it's very important not only looking at physical signs, which is very beautifully said in this cartoon, the doctor sitting behind his desk, people before his couple, before him, are tender in love, and he is thinking of their spinal columns, if everything is going to right. So I hope that more and more doctors will not be thinking, as this doctor, only thinking on the internal functions of the body and forgetting what is happening before him. This brings me to how in Netherlands we think and we work in rehabilitation. And I want to present this to you by this little scheme. Of course, functions and structures of the body are very important. Cells, muscles, bones. But these all together form something which we use as a person. And we perform an activity, or we have an ability with that. And as soon as we enter a relation with another person, and that happens all day long, all the time, we are on the level of participation. And these three levels all have to be taken into account when we talk about a human being. Even I should say a human being, if the human being has some disease or some negative health condition, or if it is a healthy person. And if I'm going to say that in more abstract terms, doctors and others, we think in disease, in pathology, and in structure and functions. And what is the thing? What we learn our young doctors, and of course they have to know that. We learn a lot about organ and body parts. And what do every doctor wants? He wants to cure. But of course you all know here that we have a lot to do with things which can be cured. ABI is a thing which cannot be cured. So then we go to the next level, the level of activities, where we are thinking on the individual with impairments. And then we do have something else besides cure. We have care. And if we go on the next level, on participation between individuals, we are on a higher level, and we are not on the level of the individual person, of the individual doctor or the individual therapist anymore. We are talking then on social position and disability. And actually, disability is not something which concerns the person or which concerns the structure of the brain. No, the disability is a problem between the person and other persons, between the person and society. And there, things have to be arranged by education and by legislation in order to have people better, giving better coping possibilities. And this model, this comes, and I think you know this, from the ICF, the International Classification of Functioning, from the World Health Organization, where you see the same divisions, health condition, body functions, activities, participation, and then in this model is very important, environmental factors and the personal factors. So, am I clear up this moment? Because I'm almost at the half of my presentation. Yes? Let me go on. And now I made another scheme. What happens after TBI? And I use another term, which is actually quite to be compared to the ICF model, but now I've used here the biopsychosocial model, which I think theory are a bit different, but you can use them both. Yeah, we see what can happen on all kind of fields. On the field of physical factors, my pointer is good anymore, the physical factors, and some already were very good mentioned by Anna in her lecture, same as the psychological factors, but Anna also said later on, be aware of the relational factors, because the relational factors will be the thing which on the long term will be the most important. There can some changes be made, probably. And that is the relationship in a couple where one will have an acquired brain injury will stand under pressure. The equilibrium which has been there in the relation will be disturbed, and the couple will have to find a new equilibrium. Roles might change, habits and matter might change, communication might be a problem in it because there might be a lot of loss in subtlety. And then I don't speak on the more severe aphasic problems, but a person with a right hemisphere lesion, they don't get the ideas, they don't get the humor, they don't get the other things, and that may put a lot of stress in the relation. And a spouse often then says during some long time, he is not my pal anymore. I am his wife, he's my man, we stay together, but our relationship has changed fundamentally. And that you will find that, I think, with the group in also the Italian study, which say that the relation is still good, but there is a very low sexual and intimacy level. So, how are we working within rehabilitation on sexual problems and intimacy? I don't know if you know this model, the Plissett model. It's a model which is used especially on sexual training, sexual counseling. Plissett stands for P, permission, LI, limited information, SS, specific suggestions, and ET, intensive therapy. What does this mean? This gives some level of intervention, and it was specially developed or specially described for aiding in sexual counseling, but actually if you take a good look, it's so for everything in counseling. So the permissive level is, are you able to talk with another on what kind of problems he or she experiences without giving a solution, but also without stopping the conversation, without putting the thing under the carpet. Let her tell, let him tell. They don't just want to have an explanation of a solution for the problem at the very first moment. The second level, and then depends on how your own knowledge and how your own emotions are, is, are you able to give limited information? Yes, indeed, it may take longer time to get an erection. It may take longer time to get lubricated. Yes. Oh, is that normal after a brain injury? Yes, it's normal after a brain injury. Oh, is that normal if you are 51 years of age? Yes, that's normal after you're 51 years of age. And if you're 60, it's even more difficult. So all kind of things within your relationship become more and more important, because you're not a youngster of 21 who sees a picture and is completely right already. Level 3, specific suggestions. Then you should have more knowledge on all kind of things, of sexual techniques. And so you should know that also from yourself. Am I able to do that on that level? Or should I call in another team member? Or should I call in a specialist? But all of us should be able to discuss with a patient, with a couple, on level 1. What is your story? What is your problem? And on level four, and that's really for the specialist, the intensive therapies, like the guy you told us in the Swiss center who masturbates openly. Yeah, that's quite abusive for all other people, and he doesn't give a damn on it himself, of course. How are we doing that generally in the Netherlands? Within the rehabilitation team, actually all members of the team have had some education. So the nurse, but also the speech-language therapist, and also the occupational therapist, have a knowledge on this implicit model and are stimulated to be very permissive on talking. And actually, that's not only for the intimacy problems, but also for learning if this person now really do wants a stick or really does want an orthesis for helping his hand or not. So, because it's not driven by what we think is technologically possible. No, he or she should want such a thing himself. In our way we do that, we are primarily focused on activity and participation. And we only go back to body functions when needed. Because the patient, he or she, herself, also talks on activities or on participation. Seldom patients directly tell you that they have so much problem with getting an ejaculation. And what we also say to ourselves, but we are also human beings and we don't always do that good, that sex and intimacy are to be considered rehabilitation goals, just like walking, just like returning to work. They have to be a standard part of your rehabilitation program. And our center, and also most other rehabilitation centers with a brain injury department, do have a sexologist as a consultant for level four. They most of the time come from nearby university or teaching hospitals, and they have one day in a month or two half days in 2 months, in 2 weeks, coming at the rehabilitation center. So now I go back and fill in some of these interventions. And when I made it, I thought, yeah, it's just the same as that I do it with giving a patient a walking aid. If a patient is not able to walk, you know, you have a problem with mobility, you can do it walking, you can do it by wheelchair, you can do it by taxi. Now, if you go to look at sexuality and intimacy, okay, of course, I am a doctor and I stay a doctor. And I want to know something about prognosis. Because in my advice and the advice of my team, I will have to know if it's regressive, stationary, or progressive, because that depends. That's also my question just for the good recovery and the severe disability, because that makes a lot of difference here. Okay, I've here the cure. I don't have that much for curing as a rehabilitation specialist. But in the care, I have a lot of things. Compensation, learning new skills. For instance, talking about different positions and techniques. There are a lot of people who don't even talk on this with their own partner. What do you like? What do I like? Top, down? First thing to do. Is there anything to do with devices of adaptations? And a device of adaptation can be body specific, a technical device, for instance, some kind of rubber ring to make the erection keeping longer. That's just the same as you go to the shop in the corner. Different position and techniques, that's double. Sometimes I do need medication. For instance, that PDE5, that's the Viagra. You probably know that that's a medicine. When a man takes that, then he gets stronger and longer erections. But you should be aware a bit with some ABI patients, because if they have strokes, they have perhaps also heart problems, and then you have to be able to make a good account on that. Yes, as a riser, I'll come back on that later. And of course, you have non-body specific adaptation. And you call that stimulatory environment or visual erotica. I once visited a rehabilitation center that was not in the Netherlands, and they had a different ward, a separate ward, for young people emerging from coma. And you know what they had there in the physiotherapy ward? They had visual erotica on video, because it's a very strong method for drawing attention. Just like, I don't know how it's here in your rehab centers, but in the Netherlands, smoking is no longer allowed. One of the most strongest and potential things for getting more alert is nicotine. So we sometimes have patients, they are a bit lazy, they are but not good enough awake, they are awake, but only for short times. Yeah, well, we allow them to smoke, because we think it's a good way for getting more concentration and being more attentive. So and the next thing in the care, yeah, information of the spouse, and there was talked already on buddies, on sex workers, or on sex therapists. And what I think is very interesting in the Netherlands, that a sex worker, that's the term I should use, some people do have a budget from the government to pay for the sex worker. It's called a personal aid budget, because it's thinking, okay, you may have needs by help with dressing. Well, help with sexuality is also an activity of daily living function. So in some cases, it's reimbursed. Sex therapist, I didn't have a good example on that for a brain injury, but I don't know, have you seen the movie The Sessions? The Sessions is about a 35-year-old male who was victim of poliomyelitis. And he is fully dependent of a ventilator, and that's the old type of external ventilator. And he can only be 2 or 3 hours of 24 hours out of the ventilator. And a person with a poliomyelitis, he or she doesn't have brain injury, but he can be completely paralyzed. And he wanted to have some experience on sexual relations. And he had a sex therapist, which 10, 15 said, beautifully movie. If you don't know it, go and see it. And the next level, with coping, it has also to be the rest, because sometimes you really have to take the loss. And you don't want to put that under the carpet. You also have to discuss that, also as a health professional. And all these things, and that's, I think, the most important, perhaps I should have said it on top, they have to be a bit self-directed. There has to be some request on help for it. Because as a professional, I can think that he might have a problem, but it won't work if I'm going to discuss it without having him out of the level one of permission to talk on it. After acute rehabilitation, we see patients at a follow-up outpatient clinic, but we also know that general practitioners in the Netherlands know enough on level one and two on these problems. For aids, devices, and facilities, yeah, sometimes there can be possibilities for the municipalities on the service of the Disabled Act, although the normal technical aids, which also non-disabled people use, they are not reimbursed. I have to be honest on that. In the chronic care, and that's where the Netherlands, I think, do differ a lot, especially from the southern and Mediterranean countries. We have a lot of possibilities for sheltered living, for nursing homes. There sometimes come a lot of other problems on sexuality. And I'm not that experienced with it, but I know it's a different field, and I think we should have another one in the chronic care, especially in sheltered living, to talk about that. Well, my experience lies here, and I have one of the cases I thought it might be interesting for you to share. Roy is a 20-year-old male, and he had a TBI on his 18th or his 17th, because he was biking on a moped bike, of course, a Saturday evening with a bit of alcohol, of course, and collapsed to a tree, and had a very severe brain injury, 25 days in coma, PTA 3 months, lesions left occipital and parietal hemisphere. On CT scan, there was no orbitofrontal lesion. The functional level, after we finished the first part of rehabilitation, he had a slight hemiparesis right. He was independent with structure, which means sometimes somebody had to say to him, do this, do that, otherwise he wouldn't do it. He lives with his parents. Sorry for not having translated this ouders, but that is just the Dutch for parents. He was not able to continue his training as a car mechanic. He was, after long training, because of some neglect, he was, after some training, saved to bike. And his neglect wasn't so far a problem, because he also had impulsive, aggressive behavior. And he could stop that with the speed of cycling, but he couldn't stop it with the speed of car driving. So he was not able to drive a car. And his personal relations, and I knew that from him already at the end of the rehabilitation, was one of what we call one-night stands. And I think you all know what a one-night stand is. That's no emotional relation. It's going to the cafe, taking somebody home, perhaps the breakfast, and then it's over. He has also cognitive deficits and little awareness of that. His language comprehension is weak. He has still some word-finding problems, and he has a slight paresis in his left eye where he has some double sight. Well, 3 years after he left the rehabilitation, there was a rush to the outpatient clinic. What? Because sexual intimidation at work. He worked then in a sheltered workshop. He was very panicked, very anxiety, and the guardians from the living room said, yeah, he's quite homophobic. And they said, perhaps delusions, shouldn't we, can you not contact the psychiatric center that he will be transferred there? Then I said, well, first I want to see him, because on his sexual behavior, that might lead to some problems in procreation. So I started exploring him and just talking with him on level one, no delusions, no psychosis. And on that case, I already said, now don't go into discussion with him on his phobia, but stimulate him for making better social functioning, for making more friends, because that was a problem. He didn't have actually real friends. That was also why his colleague in the sheltered workshop made a little joke of it, and it came very hard to him being a homo. He, the big man, 22 years, nice face, beautiful boy, he a homo. So I talked with him on his ideas on sex, on his changing partners, and he told me he always had unprotected sex. He says, I refuse to use a condom. And then I started thinking, why? Why are you refusing to use a condom? And then we talked further, and I saw a new problem. He had an ejaculatio precox, which means that he was so on a high level that as soon as his penis was touched, he ejaculated, got an orgasm, and it was over. So he didn't want to put on a condom, because when he put on a condom himself or his girlfriend, it was gone and it was finished. So there was some education to be done. And that's level two. And some technical advices, they were also on level two, how to postpone your ejaculation. And then I thought, hey, I know something. I said, I have a good medication for you. You are going to get a SSRI for you. And I told him, it's the Viagra for you. And the non-medical people under us, an SSRI has side effects. You use it normally for depression, but the side effects of an SSRI is for males that it takes longer to get an orgasm. There's even there are also normal men with the ejaculatio precox, and they get this medication. So I could give him his Viagra. And what was a bit lucky with that the SSRI also, I told it him, but he then never wanted to take it, might have some positive effect on his compulsive behavior. So I said, use the side effect. And this made him eventually more open for further neuropsychiatric evaluation, which was good for him for his awareness. So my message for this afternoon is, keep looking at all sides. Keep looking at the physical side. Keep looking at the environmental side. Keep looking at the relational side. And ask yourselves questions and ask your patient questions. And as long as you take a good look, only if you take a good look, you will have the full picture. Have you seen it? Because this statue has three legs. And it just depends on the side where you're standing, if you see two legs, and which looks quite normal, or if you see three legs. So this is what I wanted to present and to discuss with you. And I think we have some minutes now still left for some questions or discussions.
un parti.
Merci.
Y a-t-il des questions, des commentaires généraux?
Thank you for all the amazing explanations that you gave to us. I'm here.
Yes, thank you.
I was pleased to see how open-minded was your presentation. I was wondering if it's the way of coping in the Netherlands with all of this subject. Are you discussing about sex and intimacy in the general population, usually with friends, colleagues, at school? Is the environment more open to sexuality than it appears here? I'm living in Belgium, but
I think you are right that I showed you also my presentation on what level of cultural thinking in rehabilitation in the Netherlands is thought about this. But I have to assure you that also within the Netherlands there are a lot of non-permissive groups or non-permissive villages, and I think that that also the medical specialty of rehabilitation is in this way quite different from neurology. But I must say you see the same open-mindedness on sexual problems in the Netherlands also with departments of gynecology and urology. So I do think it's a bit also the more northern culture which makes it easier.
Yes, because it's more easy for people with disability to discuss about it when everybody is discussing about it.
Yeah, but that's also why this level one of the permissive, just being able to listen and to talk, and that's not a specific skill for a psychologist, a social worker, or a doctor. It's a specific human skill. So that is also when we had the training. We also, of course, differences between nurses, between occupational therapists, who are more or less easy and comfortable to talk about it. But that makes it a very nice training to have your whole team in such a training. Okay, dare to talk about it. Or dare to listen, that's the first step, and dare to listen to somebody else's telling. And make sure that the environment is safe. No condemnation, no strange remarks making if you hear something.
Thank you.
Très bien, merci.